Hey, everybody, having a good time so far? Yeah, it's weird. I've been here 13 out of the last 15 years. And I'm Randall Schwartz, by the way, just to introduce myself. And it's so amazing how much earlier the con seems to keep starting. I mean, for the people who have been coming for a while, I mean, Friday afternoon is looking like Saturday night now. This is insane. This is so cool. I enjoy this a lot. My background, my claim to fame is, let's do this. How many people here listen to Floss Weekly? Zero. Okay, that's good. More people subscribe to it. I do an open source podcast called Floss Weekly. I get to interview really cool people every week. 50,000 downloads a week, and 10 years. I've been doing this for a long time. Also, maybe a few of you might know me from my Pearl history. Anybody here know Pearl? Pearl? There we go, we got a few. That's good, thank you. Camel book, llama book, alpaca book, those are all mine. And I'm also been coming here for many years, thanks to Scott inviting me for the first time, talking about my felony conviction. And I gave a number of talks here over the years. That still impacts me, by the way, so there's still places I can't go. I can't go to Canada or Australia. Can you imagine that? I've been to 58 countries. But I can't go to Canada or Australia. I think Australia because they already reached their quota of felons. So I can't go. I can't go there. All right. Anyway.
But you're safe in Georgia.
Yes. Apparently I'm coming to Georgia. It's fine. Yes. Apparently I'm okay here. So here's the thing. How many people here want a flying car? All right. Okay. But you know what we have to do before we do that? How many people here want a self-driving car? See, that's required before. And the reason it's required before is because I spent 270 hours in the left seat of a small plane. So I know how to fly. But I don't want you guys out there flying through the air. I want that to be automated before you guys get it. I think you understand why. Okay, so here's the point. But self-driving cars have their own issues. We're going to talk about two primary issues tonight. One of them is, can we write the right laws about, well, what if a self-driving car kills somebody? Who's responsible? The manufacturer? The owner? The guy who is driving most of the time? Who do we point the finger at there? So that's one very important issue. The other important issue we're going to talk about tonight is, can it be hacked? Everything can be hacked. I'll just solve that question right away. But I want to start by having the rest of my panel here, both of you, first introduce yourself and ask and answer which of those two issues are more important, and do we need to solve both of them before deploying self-driving cars? To my left.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ishan. I am a graduate student at Georgia Tech. I work for the Internet Governance Project, which deals with a lot of technology, policy, security, privacy issues. And I actually worked a bit on the current V2V legislation at the National Highway Transportation and Safety Administration. So I know some things about connected cars. And the answer to the hacking is pretty straightforward. Everything can be hacked, and
of course,
so can cars. And so, as they have been in the past, so far for demonstration purposes and not with malicious intent, but you never know. So, the issue with designing security around self-driving cars is that you don't normally associate cybersecurity and software capability with the National Highway and Transport Administration. So it's trying to bridge these technological challenges in new areas thanks to, engineers and scientists doing their job well.
I'm Jim Nettles. I have a background in business and technology consulting. A lot of my background was actually in insurance, liability, product liability, the whole suite of insurance in the back end. And actually going back to the late 1990s, I did some work where we were starting to look at the first liability insurance policies around the technologies for self-driving cars, some of the first automation and security systems. And since that time, I've worked heavily in e-commerce. I have worked heavily in a lot of emerging technology fields, data security, disaster recovery, business continuity. I'm also a science fiction and fantasy author as well as a nonfiction author, so I'd like to take and twist it to see exactly how sick and twisted I can take those things that we do work with and play with on a daily basis. So I get to work with both the reality side and also play with ideas, concepts. What are we looking at in emerging technologies? What does it mean for us? And in terms of the two questions, I actually one of the biggest things for me is actually the ethos we're going to put behind self-driving technologies. Anything can be hacked. We see it, we know it. If it was built by people, it can be cracked in some way, shape, or form. And we know that legislation, laws, even societal pressures don't keep up with technology as rapidly as we move. And so as we look at questions like the legality of who would be liable in the event of a self-driving car, I also ask the other side of that question. If I own the car, and I put own in quotes because of current case law, if I own the car, is the car more liable to protect me or the other citizenry? And I like to throw that question out there of, you know, the self-driving car is cranking along and a bunch of kids run out in front of me. You know, is the algorithm obligated to protect me or to protect the 12 kids that just ran into the road to become speed bumps?
That's an amazing question, too, actually. I remember, I think there's a website, MIT, was it? Somewhere that has, like, these ethical questions.
Yeah.
Right. And it's really amazing to go through that and go, would you run over, you know, the kid and the dog versus, you know...
The kid, yes, the dog, no.
Well, okay. Or rather than caress into the blockade, given the... And it's difficult to answer a lot of these questions, and... one of the things we keep hearing about self-driving vehicles is like, well, if we can get them to be at least better than humans in making these decisions, does that mean we should roll it out?
You want to
say? Sorry. Do you have a final number? Two questions. One is, who are you? And then, given the issues around self-driving cars being hackable, or self-driving cars being what happens when they run over a kid, which is more important, and do we need to solve both before we deploy?
Hello, can you hear me? No.
Yep, a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, so I apologize for being late. If I had deployed a self-driving car, I might have been here on time. My greatest argument is if we can make self-driving cars, we should be able to teleport. And so I think we're a little behind in technology. But in any case, my name is Cara Chappell. I am a FOIA specialist working in the city of Virginia Beach. I am also a personal paralegal specializing in personal injury. So I may be able to answer some questions on where we can go where the injuries actually happen. So again, I apologize for being late.
So what do you think? Do you think that you have to solve both of those issues or just the important one?
Which would you call the important?
Well, the two issues were, do we have to deal with the fact that self-driving cars, and you have legislation around who is responsible when it runs somebody over, and versus do we need to make it non-hackable? As we're already sort of agreeing, that's not possible either. So,
I think the greatest thing that we're looking at is who's going to have the liability on this, as to whether it is the individual, the company that is running that self-driving car, or the person who is actually not driving that car but must maintain insurance on it, and what do those insurance limits look like?
So part of the problem here is we're looking at issues like, okay, if I have, there's like five levels, I don't have them in front of me, sorry, but five levels of self-driving cars. One of is like the ultimate, which is Johnny Cab, you know, from Total Recall, right? So that's all the way up at the top end. If that car ran over somebody, who would pay? You know, that, and that's an important issue. Anybody have an opinion on that?
Well, go ahead.
We'll take questions in a few minutes. Just going to get in the tone set here.
No, I am not a lawyer. I was a personal injury paralegal for about 14 years. So who would pay? Well, there's always a battle going on in the legal field as to who pays. That's why there are so many lawsuits all the time, dependent on who ran into who, what was the speed, who did what, and who owned the car. So when we are looking at the issue of self-driving cars, who owns the car, who actually has to maintain the insurance, and then the hacking capability, and where do you insure that, how do you insure that?
Well, and that brings up a huge issue, which is, okay, suppose I could hack a car to drive into a group of pedestrians, you know. First off, it'd freak out the guys that are in the car, but I mean, like, where's that going to lead?
Well, the one thing I throw out there is, you know, again, if it can be done, somebody's going to do it at some point.
Right.
But when you're talking about the legalities of it, the insurance, who winds up being liable to start with, you know, a lot of that's going to depend on the level of technology that's currently in the vehicle and the capabilities. So the first question is going to be, how much automation is there in that decision making? And the second question is going to be, how much of that was the driver using at that point in time? So if I've got let's say I've got Johnny Cab, but I'm, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I'm not sure who I am, if I'm a dream or not, and I rip Johnny out and I take control, I'm going to probably be liable on multiple fronts. But, you know, if I think one of the things that we also see already coming in some of what's being proposed under insurance law is going to be, if we have these self-driving cars that are fully automated, especially in larger cities, we're already seeing smart car and these sorts of things happen,
right,
where we may be moving into a time of less personal ownership of these kinds of vehicles and more on demand. So that's going to put the liability then probably on those owners and then passed on to those people that are using it. But I still think it's going to be a blend and a combination of both, because one of the things that will have to happen to be fully automated is going to be the intelligence and the sensors pushing along, not just for my one vehicle, but also everything around me within a significant region.
Right.
So any accident that happens that involves just the two vehicles is going to be largely driven by how that level of automation is going on at the time.
And I think one of the things we have to look at is that the fact that we can fly planes 90% of the time on autopilot doesn't mean we can fly them 100% of the time on autopilot. Because there are times when you just need somebody to step in and override and go, this is how to take care of this particular emergency situation. And I'm wondering, can we ever get that, even that level of autopilot in cars? Because there are times when, as a human, I'm looking at the road trying to figure out, where the heck am I? You know, where's the lane, given that we've got snow on the ground? That I think we're going to have to, I don't know if we can program that level. I'm a programmer, so I trust that we can probably get most of the way. But I wonder about that. And you want to comment on that?
Yeah, well, just to back up a bit, I mean, the autonomous vehicle argument is new in the sense that we haven't had autonomous vehicles so far.
Right.
But we've grappled with these sort of issues as technology has progressed over the years. So when the Ford Model T came out first, a lot of people wanted to sue Henry Ford for whatever accidents happened, because there was no concept of machines on the road. And like 3 years ago, Toyota had to pay millions of dollars because there was a problem with the Prius where if you actually pressed on the brakes, the car accelerated. And this was like a multi-million-dollar lawsuit. So, and there is no autonomous vehicle in that framework, but whatever accidents happened because of that bug or whatever you want to call it, Toyota was liable. So I feel like we do have the legal framework to deal with these issues. It's just that are the people making the decisions as informed about the issues as they should be?
I think from a legal standpoint, we are going to be looking at something that is going to be created from case law, state-by-state basis, and at some point maybe federal will look at it, but right now we are looking at case law on a state-by-state basis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're opening up for questions, so if you want to have a question, just raise your hand and we'll pop the cube over to you. Oh, there it is. Here. So, questions? Questions? Here we go. You in front? Oh, just put that anywhere. All right. All right, go ahead.
Hi there. So, to all of your points, so from what we understand, it's the car interpreting what the sensors are telling it, but in reality, the only way that the car can interpret these things is through the software that's put in the car. And I feel like that adds another layer of complexity, not that I have any, you know, professional experience in this stuff. But, I mean, as we all know, like, frequently with software, like, licenses are different. You may own the license, you may own the software, you may not own the license or the software, so where's the liability vested? In your ownership and the software? Is it in your license? So I feel like that might be a complex issue that could arise.
Well, there's actually case law that started on that, and that had to do with John Deere tractor, where there was a question of ownership because of somebody going and wanting to modify the operating software for the tractor. It was an industrial farm tractor, and ultimately case law came down and said, no, that's really John Deere's. They said you can't modify the software.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Which in a lot of ways in case law sort of came down to say, if I put software into a vehicle, I don't have complete ownership. I'm buying a right to use it. And I think that's one of the big keys when we get into the law of it, is going to be I'm buying a right to use it, but we've already got established case law for that. I mean, we do it all the time. If I rent a car, if I rent anything else, there's still insurance around it. And I think it's going to be, you know, like anything else, we'll see that swing where case law will be going up, up, and up, where they'll will incentivize people to get self-driving cars that are more efficient, all the rest of this. And at the same time, we'll see premiums for those things go down. And then we'll start to penalize those people who are Luddites and don't want to get into a self-driving car, much like me, because I've worked in technology for 30 years and I know it fails.
Yeah. And part of the problem with that, too, is that if the people who are building self-driving cars aren't open sourcing their software, then we can't, outside the company, review it to make sure it's not doing stupid things. You know, it might be that, you know, if you have your code published out there to everybody, then we can look at it and go, oh, you know, in a sandstorm, this thing's going to be horrible. And it would be nice to have some requirement then that, you know, some government interference that says, you know, by the way, if you're going to have a self-driving car and you're going to put people at risk on the road, it needs to be open source so that people can review it outside of the company.
Yeah, so taking like current legislation into account, there is a rulemaking procedure for V2V communications, which is going to be in effect in 2020, which means that every car sold after 2020 will need to have vehicle-to-vehicle communication capabilities. And the way that rulemaking is designed is that the software is not open source, but there is a 340-page docket which every car manufacturer's software has to comply to.
And nobody will get it right. Nobody.
And because, as I said, it's the National Highway Transportation Security Administration doing software, they had some stupid things like getting people to share PKI keys and stuff like that. Which is not a great thing if you don't know much about PKI, but so those are the kind of challenges that even if you have the government setting standards and, you know, benchmarks for manufacturers, getting those right to the extent when this is a life and death matter, literally,
yes,
is the challenge. And
well, another question?
Well, to go back to the Johnny Cab.
Okay.
If you're using Johnny Cab, you're getting transportation as a service.
Hold the mic closer, please.
And it's kind of clear that the Johnny Cab company is providing everything to get Arnold from point A to point B.
Yep.
So they're responsible. But as you move down the scale, to the point where I could take control and I turned all of that off, I should obviously be liable if I drive into the nun and the children and the puppies. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be an intermediate point where should I have been allowing the car to drive on its own if it's in a sandstorm and that's in the manual? You know, do you sense any kind of comment on where that level or where that cutoff might be?
Well, and there's actually one more component to that, because there are certain drivers behind it that if conditions become what a governing body declares as unsafe, part of the system would be to shut down everyone operating a vehicle in that area and then do automated reroutes. So there's actually been conversation about doing this when you go to that next step of automation and management of the technologies in the vehicles. Because again, you can't get to near full automation and full automaton or autonomous vehicles until they all are talking, which also means we're looking at a fairly long tail of people that, as vehicles phase out 15, 20 years, moving into the tech before everything is speaking. So, but yes, I think it's going to go down to personal liability. That's what everything is built around today, is personal responsibility.
Yeah, and so right now in California, where all these companies are testing their self-driving cars, they have to report disengagement rates, which is when the actual human in the car has to take over from the AI or software. And some of these time frames are so small that Uber had an accident, which wasn't a major accident, they just scraped on their car, but the disengagement time was 0.2 seconds. So in 0.2 seconds, the driver in the car, the human in the car, had 0.2 seconds to realize that the car is going to crash and basically turn away or brake or something before there was an actual accident. So, I mean, there's probably going to be a ruling someday in which somebody says that 0.2 seconds is a reasonable or not a reasonable time for a human to respond. But those are how these things might be decided.
Was this a recent accident that happened when someone was driving less than 3 miles per hour and ran into, it was a California State Patrol on a motorcycle?
Oops. Yeah. No, this isn't this one. This was inside San Francisco, and I think they just, drove into a truck or something.
Okay, so there was a recent one where someone was driving less than 3 miles per hour, had it on autopilot and ran into California State Patrol on a motorcycle. Chips, is
never
that correct?
Good day.
Okay,
never
so
good day.
Guess this guy saw it coming, bailed off, and he was okay. The driver of the car was okay. Everybody was okay, but a lot of people were really upset. So where do we go from here?
And we could also dial it back even from that. Let's not talk about just people running over people or hitting a car. What if an autonomous car runs a red light? What do we do?
Do they have green, red, yellow sensibilities?
We would hope.
I mean, are they colorblind?
Well, so they don't even need sensibilities, right? The dream is that the street light will talk to the car and just say that you need to stop or not. And at that point, if the street light is talking and the car isn't listening, I think it's the car manufacturer.
I think you're looking at a lot of technological and economical problems from municipality standpoints.
Absolutely.
When you start to jump into that avenue.
Yeah, and well, they're already doing, if you guys have been down Northside Drive, Northside Drive is now a smart street, which means that there are sensors everywhere, and they're logging in every car, every pedestrian that goes through, and they're testing autonomic vehicles on that street now.
Wow. All right, cool. Next question, please.
So, as you were mentioning, with what if a car runs a red light, one of the things that's been really interesting is seeing people deface stop signs and everything, and basically tricking the image recognition software that's written into these cars. One of the things that's kind of cool, you actually mentioned open sourcing a lot of this software. Do you see some sort of a cascading effect of, if we fix image recognition software to that point, what happens if we break the CAPTCHA system in the process, and now we're able to use this piece of AI to read millions of captchas and break the whole internet, essentially.
Anybody?
It's going to happen.
It's true. It is.
That's true. It already happens.
I mean, it's if you look, captcha is already fairly easily beaten by a number of.
It's one instance where, like, do you see cascading effects?
Yes.
Yeah. So, talking about like fooling, deflating stop signs. Some researcher in Germany was able to fool a self. Driving car sensors by using a $30 laser pointer. So, yeah, exactly.
What was it? A cat driving? Okay. Laser pointers are good for cats. All right. Question back here.
So, in thinking about this a little, one of the interesting side notes to this question ultimately is that while we do not have necessarily fully autonomous vehicles at any scale, we have highly assisted vehicles now flooding the streets. You have lane avoidance, you have parking assistance, you have all these things that actually will physically assume control of the car when they decide it's time to do it. You also have, this is largely coming in a big way in fleets now too, so then there's another question of when software updates trigger liability and are they behind, did they do all the regions, are they the same? But as these things fail or have things that generate litigation, I think one of the next step-up questions is, how quick is this going to make the race to federal preemption? Because before you even get to the fully autonomous car, if you have 900 different decisions on lane avoidance or backup mirror sensing or whatever that's in these various cars, nobody, whether it's the insurance industry or the consumer or the car companies or anyone, is going to want to deal with that. And then, of course, we know how good Congress is at making things that work.
All right, so when you start talking about these sorts of things, when you get into the design, the development, the code, and the legalities of all these moving pieces, the first thing I'm going to throw out there, going back to the red lights, is what is the government impetus to actually use better technologies? Because let's say that we do fully automate this. How much revenue are cities going to lose on their red light cameras?
All of it. Unless they run the red light.
Okay, so, but do we really have to have a discussion on these red light cameras first? Seriously? Do we really need to do this?
So when we start talking about the money behind this, because when we all fundamentally get down to it, we're talking about two things, business and government. And both of those, the same thing ties both of them together is money. So, you know, we're talking in here about liability and all these sorts of greater concepts. It's all about where does the money come from, where does the money go to? You know, we're talking about what's the greater good here of some of these technologies, because all of liability, all of lawsuits, all of this fundamentally gets down to compensating people when damage occurs.
Okay, so we get back to the whole red light concept, and I'm sure I'm going to hear a lot of disagreement in this room. The red light stop cameras, where they issue you a ticket, they send it to you in the mail, they say, this is your ticket, you have it, pay it, otherwise you're in trouble. That is not, to my understanding, in this state, legal service of process, correct?
That's correct.
So you can fight it, you can say, I'm not paying this ticket, not going to do it. The municipality where you live can decide to deal with it in whichever way they deem most appropriate for them. However, as I understand it, it's not legal service or process, which is a governmental.
Well, I use the red light cameras as an example, but I mean, I'm talking about the full spectrum of what we have for ordinance enforcement for drivers, whether that's speeding, whether that, you know, that's all the things that ostensibly are done in protection of public service and public safety. Yeah, but they're also revenue generators.
Sure. So if we're going to hit this most basic one, let's hit the most basic, which is currently in place. And then we're going to look at the next level of this, which would be the next red light camera for the self-driven cars. And who do they hit? And if they're not giving you legal service of process, who's paying that ticket? Should you? Should the people that manufactured that car?
Yeah. Who should and who will is probably going to be...
Well, So coming to like the revenue part, I think when you have an autonomous vehicle, they're going to be, well, just forget an autonomous vehicle, a connected vehicle, there are going to be many more streams of revenue making open up with compared to the ones it closes. So I know that already car manufacturers are wanting to commercialize V2V communication. So basically, every time you drive by a Starbucks, just the screen on the car is going to pop up. The Starbucks has a discount today. Why don't you stop here? So I'm sure cities already have like congestion charges and stuff like that. So I don't think money making is going to be the problem once you have an
No, I don't think it's going to be a problem, but it's going to be one of those things that legislators who are not technologically apt are going to look at and ask and consider how they replace money.
It's already happening.
Oh, yeah, I know it's already happening. I've been involved in some of it, but it's always fun to see the guys that aren't. Yeah.
Okay, so anyway. You said legislators and technologically apt in the same sentence, right?
Again, over here, way... Oh, sorry. Never mind.
Let's go ahead and take the next question. Thank you.
Okay. You brought up the John Deere case earlier, and what I was curious about is the tertiary effect of that case, which was... John Deere went after the farmers, and the farmers went out and found some Ukrainian hackers that gave them new firmware and solved their own problem, thus ticking off them. And at the same time, a few farmers learned what BitTorrent was, so that's kind of cool in that respect, too. But the simple fact is the technology just went around the law, and as has happened so many times, DVD players and regions. So we can talk about federal preemption and the need for all that stuff, but... In the end of the day, when we talk about something like cars that can kill people, what's the futility, I guess, in passing more and more and more draconian laws on this when the next piece of firmware that just ticks off Elon Musk comes out of Beijing so someone can take their Tesla to 57 miles per hour instead of 55?
Well, the first part of that is going to be what we already see today, which is if I violate my EULA, and you're going to have to sign a EULA probably every time you start your car, which means you're going to be liable to read it, but in case they change the firmware, they do a software update, and they go, by the way, you need to read 8,361 pages before you start your car. But if
I'm late for work?
Yeah. Scroll, baby, scroll.
Scroll, baby, scroll. But if you violate your EULA, if you hack it, I assure you the liability insurance is going to look and go, not covered. By anybody.
And that's one of the debates which is probably going to happen is that the right to tinker. Then, you know, ideally, all these car manufacturers are going to want you to never be able to open your hood of your car or ever look inside the engine, because as more and more software takes over the driving process, they're going to keep it propriety, they're going to keep their licenses. So that's definitely going to be one of the debates that will shape what kind of cars we have in the future.
Another question?
Hi there. I think moving back to discussion on determining liability, which I guess has been the entire discussion, I guess my thoughts on that, we've used this before, we've used it in the past, by determining and differentiating between autonomous use and manual use, there have been cases where they've just pulled the logs from the car. Like, I feel like it, I mean, clearly it's never going to be that simple, but I feel like that would answer many of these questions. Oh, the car was in autonomous mode. Oh, the car was not in autonomous mode. And then, I mean, in there lies the answer, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, pretty much right now.
I mean, and also that brings the issue up. I appreciate the question, which is, you know, cars are obviously going to be calculating things. And when we get pulled in to that, you know, first off, can it be evidence in a court case that this car drove me here? You know, there's probably detailed logs being made all the time. I mean, is that going to be subpoenaable? Subpoenaable? I don't know what it is, but subject to subpoena.
Able to be subpoenaed.
There we go. There we go. Right. So can this evidence, can my smart car convict me of a crime?
Yeah. it's already been used today. There's already data from tracking and GPS in cars today that's been used to convict people of murder.
And it'll be even worse when the cars are doing all the driving.
Yeah. And there's that case, right? What do you, happens if you use an Uber for a getaway after a bank robbery?
It won't.
He'll
come
be
on
here
time.
In 4 minutes. Yeah.
If it shows up at all. Go ahead, please.
To go back to the money and the economic part, the company I was with did some work with the Brits, who used to keep all of their like local geo data about boundaries and roads and all that. It was all done at the local level by little local councils, and you to get the data you had to go and pay them a fee, and that was a fundraiser for the local government, and they decided, no, let's make that a national thing and give it away. You just log into the government and get the data. People used it to write software to show traffic loading on various highways, and you had an app that would allow you to plan a minimum carbon route, actually is why they were doing it.
Sure.
The economic benefit was huge. They got more taxes by accelerating their economy this way. That's going to be the answer. No matter what it is, it's going to be the answer that generates basically the most taxes by accelerating.
Well, and one of the things out there is going to be, you know, just being taxed by the mile, and you'll be automatically taxed on a monthly basis. And I mean, that's that law is already, they've already tried to pass that in several states, as well as those movements are already on the books in several countries in Europe.
Cool. All right, another question?
I've got five people waiting.
Oh.
Five or six.
Stacking up.
We need a self-driving box.
So I know...
Amazon drone to carry it. Sorry, yeah, I did not mean...
Hover across. That'd be great.
I know right now a lot of cars being sold have automatic braking.
Yep.
And I'm guessing almost all of them use radar. I guess two questions. Number one, has there ever been any opposition research where someone like used chaff or a Mylar balloon to see if they could fake the car into stopping? And number two, if I want to kill someone by doing that, you know, wait until they pull in front of a tractor trailer and then use that to stop their car in front of a tractor trailer which can't stop, it would GM hold any liability that it worked on the car and the person died?
I believe most of them use LIDAR or just cameras. Okay. So not radar, not chaff in the sense that we understand that.
The early days they tried to use a limited form of radar and found it was easy to game.
And I mean, opposition research, I'm sure a lot of you know about the Jeep Cherokee that was stopped on the highway. So those sort of things keep happening because these things are designed by humans, and humans aren't perfect in designing things. So, I think, and you, as you know, this research gets more and more developed, you're going to hear more and more about these sort of situations. And if it's, I don't know how much of it is going to be opposition research. If it's opposition research, I'm going to be happier than, let's say, somebody wanting to kill somebody.
Speak for yourself. Oh, sorry.
All right, great. Next question.
Discussion of the vehicle-to-vehicle communication as a way of solving the problems of the cars. Basically created a mesh network of trusted nodes. But do I trust every node in the network? The answer is no. There's been studies done recently at Black Hat and DEF CON showing that 1 in 10,000, 1 in 100,000 items required to pollute the entire network and not be trustworthy. So 10,000 cars on a road, one car is generating false data, 10,000 cars can crash or just be strange. So how do you solve that problem? I mentioned earlier shutting down the entire highway. There goes an easy way. Now I can create one intentionally, shut down the entire highway, and I created another problem of 10,000 cars sitting on the highway sitting still, and I can do some sort of terrorist attack.
That's
called
Atlanta.
There's no easy solution either way.
Yeah. But the spoofing issue is important. I mean, if we can spoof data and convince all the cars around me that we're now traveling at 2 miles an hour, that'd be a great way to clear out an Atlanta freeway, actually.
Yeah, well, and there's actually another study that was done that was from the other side of it, which is as we do more, move into more and more autonomy, and people pay less and less attention to what they're actually doing operating the vehicles, when they're called upon to actually have to operate it in that smaller period, they're losing the skills, they're losing the attention, they're losing the reflexive action. So we actually could be causing a problem there as well.
Okay, next question.
Kind of already touched on it, but it was your Fifth Amendment rights and your car testifying against you, your insulin pump, your whatever, you know, your smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
And also just privacy, because your car knows where you went. It can know your political affiliations, whether you're having an affair, all sorts of things. And our law is not keeping up with this at all. I don't even hear it being considered at all. The police obviously want to convict, so they want to use everything. You know, they want you to be able to swipe your phone, yada, yada, yada. I mean, we really need to step up and think about our rights, both legally and our privacy.
What was that word you used?
Privacy? You mean
okay, so I think the first thing that we always have to remember and when stopped is if a police officer is asking to go through your car, I'm sorry, officer, thank you. I appreciate your attention and love it, but do you have a warrant? So that's
right, but I'm talking about now they suspect that you're the one that robbed the bank or murdered your husband. Now they can go ask my car, did I do it?
So the argument here is that you may not even need a warrant to get that data, right? Because Toyota might just send it to the police without your permission. And I think this is a bigger question related to IoT in general. And I don't know if you've heard of this story, but Alexa, the Amazon assistant, called the police because of an argument a husband and wife were having, and it thought it was a...
Do you mean Alexa?
a domestic abuse issue. So I think to defend the government here, there are privacy regulations for cars currently, for whatever software there is right now. I think the problem here is process, in the sense, is it being followed, and is there vigilance around those laws?
But I think there's also a potential opening here as well, because there are, right now today, and correct me if I'm wrong, your vehicle is still considered part of your domicile, in essence. It is considered part of your own personal private space. Depending on how we move forward with vehicles and how that changes, how much less is that our own private asset, our own private, you know, device, especially if we do move further and further into shared hardware, shared vehicles, because as we move more and more of these system software technologies into place, vehicles are going to become much more expensive, A, partially because they can, and B, partially for the technologies. So we may see where economically we're driven to do this. So do you have privacy rights for the period of time during which you were leasing a vehicle or leasing the usage of it?
And how would you guarantee that? You have to log in, key log in somehow?
Because if I own the car, as the company that owns the car, I may say, while you're using my vehicle, we will be monitoring you by camera. We'll have video feed. We'll have audio feed. We'll have this. We'll have that. We'll have the other. You have no privacy.
And, I mean, just owning a car might be a whole other thing which we, you know, may not have in the future, right? I mean, if every car is autonomous, why would you have one in your garage?
So yeah. We've just made Uber and Lyft a whole lot of money.
Yeah. It's good. I want to follow up on that, too, which is that I've often noted that since I check in everywhere on Foursquare constantly, that I would never be able to commit a crime, because either I would be putting myself at the scene of the crime, mm-hmm. or I would have no check-in for that period and be completely like, why didn't he check in today? So I'm already like committed now. I can never do no wrong now. That's pretty much what I'm saying. Next, please.
So I kind of want to preface this with the fact with I'm a philosopher. Ethics is kind of my domain. So my question is, through the creation of autonomous network cars, assuming we get to this fleet-wide networking, and in recognition of the social issue of the expense of the cars, have you not created a class of autonomous car users of a certain socioeconomic status, while the rest of us cannot use those cars and are therefore subject to increased kinds of danger, given, say, the limitation on software responses to dangerous situations, like 0.2 seconds to brake, right? As somebody who teaches motorcycling, we have an exercise where we have to stop at 20 miles an hour. None of us can do it in under a second. So when you do this, how do you address the issue of social safety generated by an entire class of individuals moving around in autonomous network vehicles, which ideally cannot communicate with, say, a motorcycle or a vehicle prior to the deployment of the fleet-wide system?
I'm going to say that's a very good question, and I don't know how we do that in a world where social profiling is something that we do not do preferentially.
Well, all right, so I'm going to be a little evil here. So the other side of it is, because I do have a lot of conversations from an ethos standpoint professionally, you know, what the ethos is of certain business decisions, what the impact is, you know, the greater good to the company, the client, versus the greater good to the consumer, the customer on that side. The short answer is yes, we have a very strong potential of continuing to go down a path where we are continuing to create much greater differentiation in classes by the levels of technology that are available to them. And that is just part of the nature of where we're at, is that we will continue to see people who have access to greater levels of tech are going to have certain advantages. I mean, this today is in a lot of ways a great equalizer. I have access to information and data and knowledge that in human history is unparalleled, and yet the majority of us use it for cat videos.
Nothing wrong with cat videos.
Yeah.
What? Well,
but so, you know, me on the other hand, I'm a data hound. I plow through volumes of data and knowledge and information and these sorts of things. But as a general rule, we're also seeing the fact that the greater level of technology we're given, the lazier we're getting. Now throw the rocks.
All right, let's go ahead and take the next question.
Mine kind of goes along with a question asked earlier, but another thing would be, what would be the privacy and legal implications of assuming, you know, the cars would have to be talking to the red light cam, to the red light? The government would already have the information on where you have been. So what's the privacy and legal? In fact, they don't even have to get a warrant to know where you are. They already have it going with the municipal counties, most likely monitoring what is going on the road to make sure that everything, you know, is safe and traffic is flowing, things. So what would be the privacy implication of, say, you did rob a bank and tried to flee, that they could just follow, you know, immediately, go and arrest you just on data without even having to get a warrant, because they already would technically have had it?
I think generally, and this is really totally supposition on my part, because this is far outside of what we've thought about so far. If you're going to be looking at, are they controlling, are they looking at where you're driving, then the man is really looking at everything. For automated cars, I think that they would just be, the cars would have some type of communications with the light systems, if that's possible. And again, we're talking about municipalities and level of economy and things like that thrown into it. But in order for someone to start to actually track that, I think they would actually have to be looking for someone, and it might require, again, the state-by-state type of contractual or common law type of things.
Part of the problem that is that it now is so, we have the ability to track so much big data that why not track every single interaction of every single red light camera with every single car? We can do that, and we can sort through it quickly. And that kind of data collection, 10 years ago was definitely not possible. And now it's like, yeah, just fire it up.
Well, and the other thing I would throw into that is we already, we track volumes and volumes and volumes of big data. And if everybody in here had any idea how much data is actually tracked and stored on them.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, when you look at data, it's going to be who gets to use it and how.
Right.
And I'm going to argue that the majority of the time it's not going to be for law enforcement. It's going to be to sell something to you. And, going back to, hey, I went by Starbucks, it has a sale. We know you stop here every morning, so I'm just going to go ahead and automatically pull in here.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
You know, how much of our behavior becomes modified by the technologies, the tools we have around us, and the things that make it easy? If I have habits and behaviors, our technology is going to learn that. It's going to, you know. We may operate in a quote-unquote safer world in a lot of ways, and we don't really notice how much of our decisions are already governed and driven by what we're being sold to us.
We have a Justice Department that asked who visited a website.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they can ask whose car passes.
One question I have before we start having to wrap up pretty soon here is, again, how good do self-driving cars have to be before we trust them?
So, right now we have 33,000 car accidents, fatal car accidents on the road each year in the U.S. But I think the threshold for self-driving cars is probably going to be 500. I think like the first person who dies because of a self-driving car, it pushes back the effort a couple of years, maybe even 5 years. Because I think the whole human idea of being in control of what I am driving, like, we all know that the roads are more unsafe than, say, flying or being on a boat or anything, but there is still a bigger fear of flying than driving back home. So I think it's a mindset issue rather than a technology and legislation issue to get everybody on a self-driving car.
Cool. Any other comments before we
well,
No, I just have another question. I think I'd probably reach out to everyone here. Like, I'd like to climb in my car and go, hey, drive me home. I had two beers too much tonight. Drive me home.
Welcome to DragonCon.
Yeah, welcome to DragonCon. and actually, the thing I would sort of parallel it to is, yes, we like to have the freedom of driving and operating vehicles. That is something that's been sold and marketed to us. There's a little bit less of that than there used to be, but vehicles represent a certain degree of freedom and things that we can do here. And in a lot of countries around the world where I've been and worked, I mean, it's not as prevalent. But I sort of equate it to almost vaccines. Because, yes, certain number of people are going to have adverse reactions to vaccines. There's going to be problems. But there's a greater benefit and a greater good to the society as a whole. And that's the balance, is the difference between personal rights and society as a whole as we move forward into these technologies.
One of the things I discussed with my friend before I started this panel tonight was even the Hoff would say, hey, Kit, I want control. Every once in a while. Not very often. Mostly he'd just be talking to his wrist and say, Kit, bring your car around. Knight Rider, by the way, for anybody who doesn't. Anybody's too young to remember that. Okay, right. But he would occasionally say, give me control. And I kind of like that. I don't think I'd want a car that doesn't have a steering wheel in my future. So we'll see. Anyway, we got a question back there.
Yes, matter of fact, just, well, two quick things. One, Hoff told Kit one time, I'm not getting a ticket because of your driving. But the other thing that's going to have to be meshed into all this is mechanical failures. I mean, those of us that's had blowouts on the interstate knows it can be exciting.
In a nice way.
And you have, you know, brake failures. Any kind of other mechanical failure, U-joints or what have you.
Tire blowouts are always a fun
right,
one.
Tire blowouts, that's what I was talking about. Are the cars, automated cars, going to say, well, I'm sorry, I'm not going to start because you've reached a maintenance interval.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying earlier with flying autopilots. It's like the fact that the plane can mostly fly itself, except when it can't. And that's the issue. That's why there's human beings in every single plane that takes off today.
Well,
because we have to deal with that.
No. I think with planes, we're looking at a whole different thing. We're looking at IVR versus VFR. And that's so very different from where we are right now.
I don't know that it's that different.
Well, no pedestrians were flying.
Yeah, but except the planes can hit each other. That's a bad thing. And they hit the ground at the wrong angle. Sorry, it's your opinion. See? Anybody asked?
I think Cara sort of already answered my question or brought it up possibly,
okay.
But my thought is the actual stipulations of driving, the rules of the road. As far as we use Uber and stuff for convenience, we don't want to drive or we're not able to drive, so they come and pick us up and drive us home. But with automated cars, our cars can do that itself. But if we're still at a level where if at some point we have to take control, do we
you know, Uber, do we still keep Uber around because somebody can still actually drive and take control? Or do we trust our automated cars enough to get us home if we've had two beers too many and it automatically says, oh, you need to take control, I've lost control, and you're going, I can't see the road right now?
That's a very important question. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I unfortunately don't know the answer to that. The last thing that I've seen written on that was something to the effect that if you were driving below 3 miles per hour as the operator, you were required to take over, if I recall that correctly. Something I've read in the last 24 hours. That makes it very difficult because even if you are driving 3 miles an hour and below as an operator, if you've had that two beers too many, you're still subject to that DUI. So, I think it's going to be a state-by-state and case law created type of situation because this is so new.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I'd add to that is we've already seen some essences of case law that still say even if you are the responsible party, you have to be in the legal condition for that responsibility.
So we got about 2 minutes left. Please summarize whatever you want to say. It's your last statement.
You're up.
Well, I apologize for being late again. I think that self-automated cars or automated cars, self-driven at a certain point, would be a wonderful idea. I think that we do not have a handle on it from a government or state standpoint yet. It is up for questions, and anything that anyone wants to do to drive that to your legislators and perhaps ask those questions would be great.
The only thing I'd probably add is that we know it's coming, and much like most, really divergent technologies, we don't catch up with them as a society until they're here. We don't know what to do with them until we've actually played with those technologies. We have a very difficult time playing with a blank page. And so we're going to have to experience the problems, the foibles, the trials, the tribulations of it until we know how to react with it. And I think that's really where we're at, and that's part of the point of these kinds of conversations. We can't answer the question here. The conversation and starting it now while we know it's coming, I think, is the more important part.
Mm-hmm. And, just to add to that, I think the way to look at self-driving cars is as a safety issue. And the car industry has faced these sort of changes from a safety perspective. If you've ever read about the seatbelt and airbag challenges, they didn't want them in cars, and now it's such a given that every car has a seatbelt and has an airbag. It's almost impossible to think of one without. So I think it will be that those couple of decades when we have a transition. It's probably going to be a generational gap with, me and my gray hair telling people that I used to drive a car with my hands and feet.
I'll be dead.
As long as it's not a self-driving car that hit you.
And I think the only thing I can add to that is that I think it's important that we have transparency around this, that if the car has limitations, that needs to be disclosed. And that needs to, ideally it would be all, because I'm a proponent for this, open source software, so that we can discover the areas that might be of issue, places where the software might be confused. We also have to, unfortunately, act as technologists to inform our legislators better, because I think there's going to be some bad laws that are going to be written about this. I know this personally. There's going to be some bad laws written about this stuff before we get through the tunnel, literally, to the other side. So I thank you all for attending, and have a great rest of the con.
Thank you.
Thank you.